will be at hand.
Protesters expressed support for the Yemeni army's naval operations against Western vessels, stating that the Palestinian cause helped the Yemeni people overcome the problems created by the Western powers in the country. They believe the conspiracy targets the whole region, not just Palestine or Yemen, and call on all Muslims to unite to thwart Western projects.
We went out today in Sana'a, as you can see, and in the rest of the governorates to announce to the world that our demonstrations and our position is a religious position that will not change with regimes or rulers. We will continue to insist on our position until our brothers in Gaza are victorious, receive food and medicine, and the U.S.-Israeli genocide against them stops. Our army will also continue its operations until the aggression against our country stops. Our operations are escalating, and upcoming strikes will stun both friends and enemies.
Our demonstration here in Sana'a and other governorates is to send a message that we as Yemenis have been able to overcome all the differences and problems that the enemies sought to create inside Yemen. The other message is that we continue to support the Palestinian cause, and what is happening in Gaza is shameful for all Arabs and Muslims. The operations of our army in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab are completely linked to what is happening to the people of Gaza, and the escalation of naval military operations is a legitimate move to support the Palestinian cause.
Recently, the Yemeni army intensified its naval attacks against American, British, and Israeli-linked vessels and regional waterways, resulting in the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. It also attacked an American vessel, which the U.S. claimed led to loss of lives among the ship's crew members.
Yemenis assert that the success of Yemeni naval attacks, despite the presence of Western warships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, demonstrates the capability and high-tech weaponry possessed by the Yemeni army. They believe this achievement should inspire other regional forces to join the fight and support the Palestinians in face of the common enemies. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
In recent years, Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever.
Analyzing the export trend, we see an acceptable growth in all sectors, with Iran's exports to Russia witnessing a notable increase in both volume and value. This progress not only contributes to the advancement of the two nations, but also lays the foundation for the development of other regional countries.
The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abusyan, Tehran.
On the International Day for Women's Rights, demonstrations and pro-feminism strikes were held around France by women and the men who support their fight for equality. In October 1789, the Women's March on Versailles apprehended King Louis XVI at his luxurious palace and brought him to justice in Paris. But much work remains to be done in Republican France. Only 37% of French Parliament is female, 2/3 of France's working poor are women, in large part because women compose 80% of France's part-time workers.
A return to far-right economic austerity after the COVID lockdowns hurt women more than any other minority. Women are more likely to work in the government and to use social services, so cuts to government budgets hurt them more than men.
In France, one woman is killed every 3 days by their partner or ex-partner. Our government must take more measures to protect the safety of our women. We also need policies which abolish the male-female pay gap and which better protect women from rape.
Israel's attempted genocide of Gaza has had a disastrous effect on women. From the starvation of 60,000 pregnant women to the forced displacement of 1 million females to the inhuman and degrading treatment of women by Israeli forces, according to the United Nations, to the murder of nearly 10,000 women.
Israel's genocide in Gaza is an issue for all feminists and for all humanists. Anyone who thinks that we are at the wrong march are obviously just Zionist imperialists, and they also obviously do not understand what it means to support women with equality, respect, and justice.
Globally, 60% of poor people are women. They are paid 23% less than a man, even when doing the same work, and they spend 2.5 more hours doing domestic chores than men.
We have made some progress pushing women's rights to the forefront, but we must demand many other advancements. We must also not forget about the rights of girls, many of whom suffer from sexual violence, and who must be better protected and better represented by our government.
In France and much of the West, women suffer from widespread objectification and the commodification of their bodies. France allows the use of naked women in public advertising, which many say undermines its regular claim to be a feminist model which other nations must emulate. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Hours after targeting two American destroyers in the Red Sea and at the same location where the sunken British ship Roby Mar was attacked, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that they had successfully targeted the American cargo ship True Confidence in the Gulf of Aden with naval missiles, causing the ship to catch fire.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against the American ship in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles. The hit was accurate thanks to God, which led to the fire breaking out on it. The targeting operation came after the ship's crew rejected warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Officials suggest that the U.S. claims of the loss of lives come within the Western narrative and could be a fabrication to justify larger aggression against Sana'a and to garner international support against Yemeni naval operations.
Since 2015, we have been facing the American-backed Saudi aggression, and in all our military operations, we have not targeted any civilians, and this is an honorable history for our armed forces. Regarding the deaths of civilians in the attack on the American ship, this news comes within the American narrative. This news may be fabricated to escalate attacks against Yemeni territory. We are prepared for confrontation in all its forms, and our naval operations will escalate whenever the Western attack escalates, whether against our brothers in Gaza or against Yemeni territory.
U.S. officials reported that three of the ship's crew members were killed while others were critically injured.
Observers state that the Yemeni army's latest operation substantiates that the threats of escalating naval operations were not mere media propaganda. Moreover, they assert that the Yemeni army has already begun deploying unexpected weaponry, catching the U.S. Navy off guard and leading to the failure to protect its vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
On Gaza continues unabated. Israel is pressing ahead with its systematic move to dehumanize the entire population of the Gaza Strip and destroy all aspects of life in the besieged territory. Piles of rubbish and solid waste are now a normal scene in Gaza's streets after Israeli forces targeted all parts of civil life in Gaza, including the municipalities, where dozens of the crews were killed. Waste storages and all related equipment, including waste collection vehicles, were also destroyed in the war and completely paralyzed.
Israeli forces targeted several vehicles used to remove the rubbish, as you can see over there. This left us paralyzed in handling the tremendous amounts of the rubbish left by the displaced people crammed in the central area. We demand that all international bodies help by providing us with the needed equipment and vehicles.
Not only did the deliberate Israeli attacks against the municipalities cause this crisis, but Israeli prevention of delivery of fuel needed to operate the vehicles and equipment worsened the problem. This caused rubbish and wastes to pile up on the streets and in shelters.
This is a big problem we have been suffering from since the beginning of the war on Gaza. The rubbish is scattered everywhere in the vicinity of the hospital, which causes a lot of diseases for people, particularly the children.
Infectious diseases are ravaging Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the health system collapsed by the war, and dire conditions and scarcity of food and clean water have set off a public health crisis. The Gaza Health Ministry, alongside many international organizations, has called for an end to the catastrophe that is looming in terms of the infectious diseases that began to spread on a wide scale among the displaced Palestinians. Hundreds of thousands of those people, mostly women and children, were now diagnosed with contagious diseases like hepatitis and intestinal diseases.
More than 150 days of this war led to mass displacement of the people who crammed in the evacuation centers without having a real access to the hygiene and cleanness. This caused a lot of infectious diseases, particularly among the children. Needless to mention the severe shortage of the medical supplies and assistance amid the overwhelming number of injuries inflicted by the Israeli attacks.
Months-long incessant Israeli bombardments have put the vast majority of the health facilities out of service. This, as limited sanitation facilities and overcrowding shelters are causing the spread of disease and keeping Gazans from recovering.
It's another dark side of the deep catastrophe that still afflicts the Palestinian people as a result of the ongoing apocalyptic Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. While the outcries of the Palestinian civilians are still unanswered and muted by the American veto. Mutab Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Discussing legal avenues to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Adamant about finding a way to end the catastrophe in Gaza, Iran's Red Crescent Society brought together legal experts from 21 countries in Tehran to attend an international congress on the occupation of Palestine, with a special focus on Israeli violations of international humanitarian law.
Today, what's happening in Gaza is beyond words. Terms such as war crimes are simply not enough to describe what the Zionists are doing. It's been over 5 months, and more than 30,000 people have been killed. The least Muslim countries can do is completely cut off their ties and trade with the Zionists.
A stance that was reiterated by every single speaker of the conference.
Legal experts have been voicing their support for Palestinians. What is happening in Gaza is against everything we know to be the pillars of modern society, violating the Geneva Convention, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and international humanitarian law.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international humanitarian law clearly gives the right to Palestinians. The Israelis are violating the Geneva Convention day in and day out. They should be held accountable for all these crimes in an international tribunal.
We're very clear that the United Nations, the Security Council, at this stance is politicized.
So far, calls to allow food distribution in Gaza have been denied, and there have been numerous warnings against a looming famine. With more than 40,000 online participants from different cities in Iran and around the world, the call for change can be clearly heard.
The participants are demanding accountability. They say today the same countries that wrote the Geneva Convention and the international organizations that claim to be advocates of human rights are silent in the face of Israeli atrocities in Gaza. However, with public opinion shifting against the Israeli regime, this conference could be a first step in creating the kind of change the international community wants to see. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran. We'll be right back.
The right to speak out, to protest, the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year.
This is an affront to democracy and an indication of a weak and decaying government's descent into authoritarianism. It's totally out of touch with the British people and actually very much out of keeping with the British values that they claim to champion.
Ahead of Walney's recommendations and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
In recent weeks and months, we have seen a shocking increase in extremist disruption and criminality. What started as protests on our streets has descended into intimidation, threats, and planned acts of violence.
Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. Some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a Member of Parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Saeed Pour is up, London.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willest, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, it is day 155 of this dystopian reality that we are witnessing. The Zionist regime continues with this genocide, and now the death toll has risen above 30,800 Palestinians in Gaza. The United States says it will build a temporary port off of Gaza to help get humanitarian aid to enter the Strip, as the majority of the population is at risk of starving to death. But what does it mean for Washington to build a port to get food to the Palestinians in Gaza and at the same time continue to arm the Israeli regime to proceed with this genocide of Palestinians? Well, stay with us as we look at that and a lot more on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Amal Wahdan, human rights activist out of Ramallah. And Saab Shath, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start in Ramallah. And Amal, in your perspective, okay, I think I've lost the connection with Amal. Do you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you now.
Okay, great. So why is the U.S. building this port, but at the same time it's continuing to supply the Israeli regime? I mean, what does it mean?
Well, I think this is like a silly charade here by the USA. Instead of, going around the bush, why don't they open the borders, open the Rafah border, open Kerem Abu Salem and Beit Hanun border? If they are really sincere and if they want to solve this incredible humanitarian crisis in Gaza, which is affecting almost most of the Gazan people, over 2 million people, there is another easy way. First, ceasefire now. Can they push the Israelis for it? Can they enforce a ceasefire on the Israelis? Of course. If they supply them with everything they need, they should have the method and the tools to force a ceasefire on the Israelis. Okay, ceasefire is not working. How about the borders? The Rafah border. Why is Rafah border is closed in front of thousands of trucks who are, meters away from the borders crossing? And Kerem Abu Salem, the Israelis claim that they send assistance to the Palestinians through Kerem Abu Salem. The U.S. is a superpower. They can do the same. There is millions of ways that the Americans can help the Palestinians with, but the real thing is that the Americans are allied with the Israelis. They don't want to solve the problem. Actually, for them, ethnic cleansing, they witnessed it in 1948. They actually helped the Israelis took over Palestine in 1948, and they helped with all the massacres that was happening. The New York Times and Life magazine, whoever wants to go back into 1948 massacres, can see they have documented every massacre that happened in Palestine. The New York Times was there. We are using their pictures that documents the massacres. So the Americans were there from day one. They wanted this area as a military base. The 1948 borders was not enough for them. They allowed the 1967 war, and the Israeli colonial entity occupied the whole of Palestine and occupied the Syria, the Golan Heights. The occupied Golan Heights and Sinai. So what is happening in Gaza now, what is happening in the West Bank, what is happening in Jerusalem in 1948 is all supervised by the U.S.
Okay.
U.S. is a close ally. So this is a charade, but it has other intentions.
Stay with me, Amal. Let me get Saab in on this conversation. Saab, your take of what Amal said, do you agree with her that if the United States wanted to stop this genocide immediately, that it could? And if you agree with her, what is it getting out of this?
The United States of America, of course, with one phone call can stop the genocide. The United States of America have the Zionist entity, its own military base in the region. So the chief staff is Biden here. He can stop that. But the United States of America is coming with gimmicks, or as Amal called it, charade. First of all, of that floating port. The main thing with it, apart from that, we can witness all the Western leaders led by Joe Biden encouraging the genocide, the ingoing genocide in Gaza. And their aim, the end goal, is to ethnically cleanse the people from Gaza. And after that, they will do the same in the West Bank and 1948. The aim of this floating port is to encourage immigration of the starving, displaced Palestinian people. We know there is 90% of the Palestinians in Gaza are displaced now. They are hungry, they are lacking proper shelters and proper medical facilities. So this is to push them to immigrate to Europe or anywhere else when they start the ships comes into Gaza. Why is the United States of America and as a Zionist entity not opening Rafah crossing or the Karam Abu Salem or the other areas or the other crossing? It's as we witnessed at the start when aid was coming to UNRWA and the Palestinian local government in Gaza, the Zionist entity were shooting at the police, not to police the queues of the people who's handing the aid. So they don't want any authority within Gaza. They want to eliminate that. It means aid crossing from Gaza on land, going inside, it means have to arrive to an authority to handle it and to distribute it. They, if we witness, Joe Biden denied from the beginning the numbers of deaths in Gaza because he want to legitimize the Palestinian Authority in Gaza, which is elected in 2006. He want to ignore the mandate of the Palestinian people given to this local government in 2006 and been elected and afterward. So he, genocide Joe, is trying to say this territory now under his control and he going to do with it what is fit.
So let me just jump in here, Saab. So you're saying that you think that this port is being set up as a way for those Palestinians who want to leave to help them leave. Are you saying that this is something that the United States is setting up, basically a continuation of the Nakba to get rid of the Palestinians?
It's exactly not even to people who, the starving people, people when they spread pandemics among them, they are desperate, they want any kind of safety. When we witnessed last night in Rafah, the tall building in Rafah, Al Masri building, was targeted, and lots of people in middle of Rafah running, and that's supposed to be in a safe area in Rafah. So there is no safe area, there is no sub-home aid supplies, there is nothing getting in, and they're blocking all the avenues. So, and they're opening one corridor, which will take them to Cyprus. This is what the Americans are trying to do. But I believe myself, the Palestinian resistance will make sure this won't work. The United States of America now and the Zionist entity are arming some Zionist agents for her, and they're training them somewhere, I heard, in Sinai, and they are preparing them to take control of the aid, to distribute the aid which is coming from the sea. So that is mean this is the authority, the Zionist entity, and the Americans want to impose in Gaza. And this is for what left from Gaza then. So, on the other hand, we witness, even CNN a couple of days ago made a report about that. They from Eretz, Netzarim, area used to be called Netzarim when the Zionist settlement was in Gaza before they were evicted from Gaza by the resistance. They're building a corridor to split Gaza nearly in two halves, around a 4 mile road to take it from Salah al-Din Road to Al Rashid Road. To the Zionist entity want to control the security of Gaza Strip while the Americans doing that corridor. So in the future, they can't send any troops in if they can discover any help for the resistance. So the whole project of what the United States of America is doing, humiliating the Palestinians by airdrops and killing them as well. Secondly, handing over the whole territory to the Zionist entity, helping them in a cleansing as much as they can with the Palestinians and displacing them around the world.
Well, staying with yourself, what do you think can be done? Because you've just talked about this scenario, and then you talked about the Palestinian resistance. But on the other hand, as you said, we have these people who have been under so much pressure, and they are starving, although they have shown unbelievable strength and faith. So in your perspective, what is the role then of the Palestinian resistance in all of this at this point to be able to prevent it from happening?
You see, the Americans' genocide, Jew, and the Zionist entity, and lots of the elites, ruling elites in Europe, look at the Palestinian children and women and people. Are not. They look at them as the child going to be a freedom fighter in the future. So they are legitimate targets to the Zionist entity. And they look, they have to cleanse the Palestinian people from there. Otherwise, those people can mushroom another resistance in the future. That's what they think. They think already they're nearly going to eliminate the Palestinian resistance. But they are mistaken. The only sore hands they're holding the Palestinian resistance from is the population. Because they are targeting the attacks against the people, starving the people, targeting the civil infrastructure. But the resistance is directing massive blows against them. And the Zionist entities, the occupation forces in Gaza, they know they are receiving a huge blows in there. The resistance under the ground, over the ground, beside the rubble, in the destroyed towns, okay, are in control at the minute. And they will make sure this project of the United States of America will fail.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Your take on Saad's analysis of why the United States wants to open this port?
First, it wants to fool the whole world. First, the Palestinians and the Arab world and the majority of the people of the world who are demonstrating in millions in the streets every week, as we witness them on the news channels. Second, they want a footstep. I think this is a way of indirect occupation. When you see that they want to build a port just offshore Gaza, and 1,000 Marines are going to be involved in this, it's an indirect occupation. You know that there is a geopolitical situation here. There is an alternative route for the gas, as you probably know about it, coming from India to the United Arab Emirates to the Saudi Arabia, then to Gaza, Gaza, and to Europe. From Gaza, it goes to Cyprus or it goes to Turkey, and then to Europe to counter the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, and also to counter the road and the Belt and the Road, the Chinese initiative that is
Silk Road,
going in the different continents. So this is a global war that is going on, and if the U.S. crosses the lines, the limits, we might be in front of a regional war or a global war. Now, the resistance, I'm sure that the resistance is full aware of what's going on, and with the Americans' scheme, and they will consider any foreign troops on the Gaza soil or water is an occupying power, and they will treat it exactly as they do with the Israelis. So there is no chance for Biden or the Pentagon or any of their allies, that the British are involved in this. The United Arab Emirates as a superpower in the region, you know, they are involved in this, of course, to finance it. That's why they are needed by the U.S. to pay for it. And Cyprus is involved. So this is a whole scheme orchestrated by the U.S. in order to make a footstep here in the area. They knew that the Israelis didn't do their job. 5 months now, almost 6 months now, 155 days, the resistance didn't give up. On the contrary, the resistance is inflicting so many casualties among the Israelis. The economy is falling apart, and the army itself, the military establishment, the security establishment is falling apart. They are, officers, high-ranking officers are resigning from their posts because of what's happening, because they are not satisfied. They are not seeing a goal, an end to this whole war that has been going for 5 months now. So if Israel is failing, the U.S. thinking that they will succeed in this, although the defeat that they are having in Ukraine, the defeat that they faced in Afghanistan, the proxy war of 12 years in the Arab world and the surrounding region, this all proved that the U.S. could not achieve any of its geopolitical goals in the area. And now the whole game is in the air, whether the Americans will hold back or step back, or they will continue with their aggression against the area. Aggression. Okay. And the Palestinians and the Gazans are in the face of this whole thing. The West Bank. The West Bank is another battlefield here. And no one cares what the settlers are doing. No one cares what the Israeli army is doing. And the U.S. comes with the two-state solution. Goodbye. Two-state solution is already dead. 30 years, nothing happened with that illusion of a Palestinian state. So
let me just jump in here, Amal. Let me get Saab in on this. So Saab, Amal says, so the whole game is in the air at this point in time. So is the situation that's happening in Gaza, basically the line now between this transition of this unilateral world and multilateral world that right now Gaza is central into this battle, And the transition, do you see that as part of it?
Yes, Gaza gave the opportunity, but the only global powers who has taken advantage of this is only the regional global power, which is like Iran. But on the other hand, the Chinese and the Russians, they are not moving forward to weaken the American position. That's why the United States of America has become vicious and become so intent in defeating the resistance in Gaza, because as I agree with Amal, this Zionist project, which is an entire domination project for the United States of America and the region, is on reverse. The Palestinian resistance put this project in reverse. I will give it a date from 2005, when they make them and their settlers run away from Gaza at the time with Sharon. And the same thing, the Lebanese resistance in 2006 directed a massive blow after the year 2000 when they pushed them to Lebanon. So the whole project is on reverse. But the United States of America, as we seen in the 8th of October, when with the whole Western leadership came to shore up this Zionist entity and the settlers as well who fled from the south near Gaza and the north near Lebanese border, to ensure they will be protected and will return to their homes, because without them, there is no project. This is a tool for the United States of America to hegemonize West Asia with its oil, with its transport. Throwing hegemony of West Asia, it can control the growth of China and the existence as a superpower of China in the future. The Chinese not grasping the chance now in an effective manner, nor the Russians. They are two selfish players. They didn't see the global opportunity in front of them to give it a proper kind of analysis and to get involved more in it. So the Palestinian resistance here and the resistance camp within West Asia paying heavy price, but there is no global power to grasp the opportunity as I see it.
What about that, Amal? Do you feel that the United States sees the beginning of the end of the Israeli regime and it is trying to do whatever it can to shore up that front because of its own interests, as Saeb has said?
Yes, of course. They don't. That's why they are supported the entity, the colonial Zionist entity, from the beginning. It's like a military base for them, you know, in front of the Eastern powers and in front now of the multipolarism powers that is rising. So yes, of course, they want to support the Israelis, and we saw them. We saw the Europeans. They wanted, or they are supporting Israel to defend itself. Defending itself means the destruction, the total destruction of Gaza Strip. Does it mean to kill over 31,000 people in addition to those under the rubble? Does it mean to displace 1.5 million people? Look, Gaza is like a battlefield of the Second World War. It cannot be accepted. It cannot be tolerated. I agree that Russia and China should play a bigger role here, should play a decisive role here. And we ask these questions, and we raise our voices that diplomacy is not enough, and international organizations, UN, the UN Security Council, are not the right tool, because America is blocking the way. They know that these organizations, these global organizations like the Security Council, is not working.
I'm so sorry I have to end here, but we are really out of time. I appreciate both of you. So sorry, Amal. Another show, hopefully, we'll talk. Amal Wahdan, human rights activist, Ramallah, Saeb Shah, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. Goodbye for now.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
More than 30,000 women and children have been martyred in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza since October 7, 2023. International criticism of the Zionist regime targeting residential areas has been growing as the war grinds on. In December, South Africa accused the Zionist regime of genocide in Gaza in a case filed at the International Court of Justice. More and more children have been starving to death as famine gradually takes hold. Two-month-old Mahmoud Fatouh starved to death last week next door to one of the richest countries in the world. He's one of the now 16 children who have died of hunger in the Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Al Jazeera English wrote, his voice breaking, Hossein Jaber recalls how his four-year-old daughter was killed by the Zionist regime forces before his eyes. The photographer, who works with the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, was trying to flee Gaza City on December 5th to get his family to safety when his daughter's life was ended. Jaber said as he stood amid massive destruction with his left arm in a cast and held together with external screws, this area was empty. He was hit in the same attack that killed his daughter. He said, there was no one on this road here except the building's residents who were walking out about to leave towards the west as ordered by the army, including my family. I was waiting over there. He gestured to his right, waiting for them. There were women, children, and elderly folks, and you could see them clear as day. His family had been sheltering in a building for 4 days with friends. Jaber had been staying elsewhere for work until he drove over to evacuate them. He said, describing later on social media how an Israeli tank sprayed the area with bullets. Salama was first. She got to the crossroads with her sister Sarah running behind her towards me, and suddenly intense gunfire broke out. I saw Salama get hit in the neck before my eyes. She was writhing with pain but kept running somehow. I ran to her to embrace her and carry her to the car while my wife and children Omar and Sarah kept running. Jaber is not sure when he was hit in the arm. He still cannot comprehend what happened, he said, pointing overhead in the direction of a buzzing sound and saying there had been surveillance aircraft overhead the whole time, he said. It was apparent to those aircraft that these were civilians fleeing the building and heading westward as per the instructions of the Zionist regime army. We posed no threat. Salome was killed while Sarah, her 9-year-old sister, miraculously survived death when a bullet penetrated her jacket. It went in one side and out the other. Millimeters separated her from death. My 3-year-old son, Omar, still asks me where Salome is. He doesn't understand how she could have been with him walking down the road and now she's just gone. Jaber walks to stand in front of the Borag school, where his family had told him the Zionist regime tanks had moved in after the refugees staying there had fled. He said, the school was east of the building where my family was. That's why I asked them to exit to the west, to stay away from the direction where the tanks were. Walking over to stand where he could point out the building, which had been hit with artillery shells every day they were there. Inside the building, Jaber stands in a dark, burnt-out stairwell, telling Al Jazeera English that this is where his family stayed, crowding into the center of the building to escape the continuous bombing that targeted the building from all sides. Last week, it was estimated that more than 30,000 women and children were martyred in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza. International criticism of the Zionist regime targeting residential areas has been growing as the war grinds on. In December, South Africa accused the Zionist regime of genocide in Gaza in a case filed at the International Court of Justice. More and more children have been starving to death as famine gradually takes hold. 2-month-old Mahmoud Fatouh starved to death recently next door to the countries around it. He is one of the now 16 children who have died of hunger in Gaza. According to the United Nations, one child in every 6 below the age of 2 is already acutely malnourished. Today, all Jaber's family has of Salama are the digital images of her on his mobile phone. The videos are a testament to joy. Salama can be seen dancing for her father's camera, proudly reading a poem or smiling on a beach. Her father wrote, "Salama's image will remain present in my heart and mind. Salama, my middle daughter, intelligent, affectionate, forever beloved." Salama's 5th birthday would have been on February 4th.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.